development opportunities lie in the hands of local entrepreneurs who know what the problems are, they know how to solve it at a low cost, and they know how to find talent locally that can be affordable.
The Startup Sensations Podcast. First-hand accounts of the real stories behind the successes, challenges, and opportunities of starting and growing a startup company. From both sides of the pond. With Bulent Osman and Shelley Bays.
And welcome back to yet another episode of the Startup Sensations Podcast with me, Bulent Osman, here in the UK, still just outside London.
And me, Shelley Bays. And oh, I hate to admit this, but it's raining here in California, Bulent.
That's lovely to hear, Shelley, because it's raining here as well.
We need the water.
We don't. But I'm glad for you. I'm also glad for us, you know, Shelley, because we've got a brilliant episode this particular week. And it's with a lady that you know well. Her name is Marsha Wolf, and she's a major investor in the continent of Africa. And I believe she invests in entrepreneurs in Africa.
Well, Marsha is a force of nature. And yes, her funds target the tech sector in Africa. And she has just single-handedly, although she will give a lot of credit to her team appropriately, but single-handedly, she has built this wonderful investment arm over more than a decade now in Africa, learned how to do it right, had some exceptional exits. I mean, this is one smart woman, brave woman, who has taken advantage of the opportunities in a place where many people are still very worried about investing. So I think what will be interesting is, why Africa? What did she find there? And I'm really looking forward to hearing her describe what incented her to go and look for the opportunities there.
And I'm now delighted to welcome Marsha Wolf, now joins us from California. Marsha, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Really well. And we're excited, aren't we, Shelley, to have Marsha on the show.
Nice to see you, Marsha. Absolutely. This will be a really fun discussion.
We'd like to kick off really by asking you what you're up to today, because I know you're involved in all sorts of startup communities, especially in Africa. Would you just share with the audience what you're doing today?
Sure. I am currently writing a book about my experiences in building up what became the most active investor on the African continent. That's a result of building a team and a firm that focuses on tech startups in Africa.
Why Africa? What did you see there? What inspired you?
The entrepreneurship that I experienced on my very first trip to Africa convinced me that they were doing everything they possibly could. And the least I could do was connect them to resources.
How did you get in touch with these people? I'm kind of curious how this all came about, because you've created a whole ecosystem around this.
Well, I was a member of the first team that opened an office for a New York listed stock exchange company that we'd helped build for the prior 15 years. And when we landed, our flight had been delayed. So the scheduled people weren't there. And so we had to pinch hit. That's when I saw the entrepreneurs in action on the ground, the Africans in Joburg Airport. They were fearful of our safety as executives from an American corporation that was setting up operations there. And so we were doing a joint venture with Peristatal. And I was really impressed with the way that the entrepreneurs were the glue that was connecting the large entities into building a potentially prosperous long-term project for African development.
So you started there in South Africa, then you've expanded your sort of reach to other parts of Africa. So what were the things that you looked for and how did you do that?
I diversified out of South Africa. I saw its advantages, but also its shortcomings and how very, very different it was from the rest of the continent. They actually refer to themselves as South Africa, as if it's one word. You know? And the whole rest of the continent is Africa. You know, have you been to Africa? Yeah, it's over there. And, you know, if you want to do business in Africa, you have to come through South Africa. That was the story I was told. But I've learned since that that's actually not the case. The South Africans really have not done that spectacular a job on entering the rest of the continent. But you know who has? The diaspora from the rest of the continent that has gone abroad to the places where you and Bellent are now, and places like where I live, and, you know, come through Silicon Valley, and they've returned back and they've established their own infrastructure systems for technology to flourish, their own investment clubs to invest in their own entrepreneurs. All of this is becoming a solid, stable, sustainable ecosystem. Are there gaps? Yes. Is it perfect? No. Have we made money? Yes. Have we realized exits? Yes. Do we have robust pipelines? Absolutely.
So you focused on tech. What do you see in that sector? Is Africa just taking what's already been done in the US and copying it for Africa? Are you seeing very original ideas that could be transferred to the US? Maybe all of the above.
Who doesn't want higher quality, more efficient, less costly services and products? If the Africans can afford it and it's efficient, that business can go global. And they do. They have. For example, my bank, my U.S. banks are so far behind in their tech services. And I was having dinner in San Francisco with a group that was traveling from one of the top banks in Kenya through Silicon Valley. They're actually doing kind of a world tour with their CEO, and the COO, who had been from Silicon Valley, she'd hired a CTO, you know, for over technology from Silicon Valley. And he was building out an advanced global banking system for this bank in Kenya. And I asked him over dinner, how would you rate U.S. e-banking as compared to African e-banking capabilities currently, right now? And he said, oh, Africa's light years ahead. And it's true. You have to, if you get used to doing your e-banking in Africa and investing in it, then you go to your local bank and they want to spend like weeks opening a simple account. And then you don't have anything better than wire transfers to help you. I mean, they really don't understand how advanced African systems are for being able to make payments, receive payments, cross borders internationally, instantaneously for low cost.
Interesting.
Is it innovative? Is it novel? Is it cutting edge? Yes. I mean, all you have to do is look at some of the exits that investors like me have already realized. Paystack was bought out by Stripe after two young Nigerians had only been building it for 4 years. And Stripe was so impressed with the innovations that they'd already seen delivered that they bought it out. They had been one of the first investors in, and they bought it out for $200 million. Do you know the kind of exits that those angels got after being in for 4 years or less?
Pretty good.
Marcia, can I ask about the regulatory environment, especially in South Africa? Obviously, this is post-apartheid. And even today, the whole sort of system of government is somewhat challenged, let's say. What was your experience in dealing with the regulatory kind of framework there? And how different is it to, let's say, America?
South African regulatory environment is not business friendly. Nigerians, for example, is. Now, is that what you're going to find in the Economist magazine? No, but it is. Was it easy to get there? No. There were kids in the street a couple of years ago. But now do they have a startup act enabled that is being deployed? Yes. So when you talk about regulatory, it varies. That's the strength of investing in Africa. Because if one country gets it right, then the other countries come on board. Meanwhile, everybody's kind of experimenting, seeing how reserved they have to be, how averse to change they need to be versus how the experiments are coming out, what's actually working. And so they're more easily adapting than a staid government could do. Now, that said, 50% of our investments are Delaware registered in the U.S. They are founded by Africans who have come through advanced educations and have stellar resumes. And they've just looked at the opportunities both here and in Africa. And they say, we could do better back home. And so they'll set up the corporations through Silicon Valley accelerators, register the company in Delaware, go back home, and start the process of building out solutions to really big problems. I mean, there's 1.2 billion people there, and there's going to be 3 billion real quick. And most of them are young, working age, and those youth know how to do tech. So why tech? Asset light, low cost, high efficiency, rapid growth, rapid return of profits to investors.
And in terms of tech then, which of the countries in Africa are the most advanced and which are the ones that are really lagging behind? And why is it that they are lagging behind?
The four top countries in terms of prosperous tech investing and growth of that sector: South Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, and Kenya. Now, out of those four, there are two countries that are predicted to capture the lion's share of the growth of the whole rest of the continent that has 54 total countries. And those two countries are going to capture 72% of the population growth over the next few years. Those two countries are Nigeria and Egypt. I mean, people say, oh, well, you know, Nigeria gets way too much of the investment money, but not really. If you break it down on a per capita basis, it's always below Kenya. And Kenya has a problem because of its European heritage. So the Europeans love to go there and launch businesses and try to solve problems. And the local entrepreneurs, the indigenous people, are not as well supported financially. But in Nigeria, there's a survival of the fittest culture. You know, if you've survived in Nigeria, you know how to make your business work and grow and get the returns back to your investors.
What strategies have you used in talking to investors for your funds? Because, you know, there's always the attitude, Africa's scary, Africa's unstable, they don't know what they're doing the way we do. So how have you found investors? Have they been mostly African? I don't think so.
There's a saying, your greatest strength is also your greatest weakness. And sometimes stability is not your friend. Africa is an emerging market. So the money should not be going into profitable corporations that are just expanding their reach. They are not going to have enough deal flow. They think, oh, we're going to try to do this in a place that doesn't have that kind of deal flow. Every time I'm interviewed, the interviewer says, well, everybody says they have trouble with deal flow. Do you? I say, no. If you've got an emerging market, you've got startups, you've got entrepreneurs that need equity investments. If that fails, because a lot of them will fail, you both walk away and say, well, we tried. Let's try something else. You're experimenting. This is a scientific process where you learn all you can learn, and then you do the best with the information you've got, but you do a little bit. It doesn't cost much to test things out on a tech startup. And if it fails, you don't lose big. And meanwhile, you've invested in 20 of these things, and two of them can pay you back 3 or 4x everything you put into the whole lot of them. But what you're going to do is start doubling down on those two or three that are doing well and see where they go. And then another couple of the original five that you liked best will drop out. And then you put even more in. And then how do you get profitable exits, right? Do you have to wait for it to IPO? No, this is a whole new brave world, remember? So what do you do? Well, remember all those people out there that wanted to find profitable companies and put their debt into? Now's the time. Exit. They'll buy out your equity and they get to do whatever they want to do. Private equity wants to only write checks, like the investing arm of the World Bank. They really only prefer to write 20 million checks into companies that are already profitable. Well, that's not exactly pioneering emerging markets. So you have a whole lot of room for people who come in as angel investors, tech accelerators, angel networks and to build up all of that first flush of profitability that we talked about Paystack having when Stripe bought them out. The problem with this whole ecosystem was that the people who manage the money, the risk-averse people, that's a total mismatch with where the opportunities are. The development opportunities lie in the hands of local entrepreneurs who know what the problems are. They know how to solve it at a low cost in a way that the market can embrace it. And they know how to find talent locally that can be affordable. The cost of their burn rate is one-tenth of what it would be in Silicon Valley. So you say, oh, well, that's because of the risk premium. Well, that's absolutely true. But what if because of your superior knowledge, your insights, your friends, the people you know, that you realize the risk premium should only be 5-1, not 10-1? This is from a woman who never gambles. I put one dime into one slot machine in Los Angeles Airport. It didn't come out and I never gambled like that again. But I am a scientist. I love scientific process. I stay up on all of the latest innovations. And this is a scientific process of investing.
So, Marcia, on this program, we love to talk about the cultural differences typically between the UK and Europe and the US. But in this case, of course, we'd love to explore the cultural differences between Africa, all those 54 countries that you talk about, and indeed the Western world, mostly, let's say, the UK, Europe, and of course, the US as well. So how would you summarize those differences?
I love exploring cross-cultural relationships. I was born into that because my dad was military, so I became very comfortable and curious about other cultures. It's just fascinating to work with the diaspora of one country who are living in another country. And in the process of working in Africa, I've been introduced to African students in the United States who are entrepreneurial and determined to build out businesses once they move back. And so that's really been the focal point for my work. I realized that the African diaspora were key to opening the continent for prosperity. And first I saw it among my Asian friends in the 1970s who had come to Silicon Valley, Pacific Northwest, learning about tech, learning chemistry, and then going back home and being leaders. They were the cream of the crop. And that's exactly what has been happening in Africa. One of my first experiences, I was invited to speak at the World Bank as to where I saw African diaspora fitting into the whole process of building out African prosperity. And this was about 2004. And I was invited there by one of my African entrepreneurs, a young woman who was from the highlands. Her family had a tea farm in the Kenyan highlands, and she was building out a brand. I mean, that's a real simple business model, right? It's a lot of work, but it's not hard to grasp. During the lunchtime, the World Bank officials were kind of clumped over in one corner, and they were pointing over to where my friend was, and they said, she's actually an African entrepreneur. It's like they'd never met one before, and yet their careers were dedicated to African development, but they'd never met an African entrepreneur. That's when I knew there was a major gap in the system.
Wow.
A lot of investors want to just invest in other, you know, if they're European, they want to invest in a European who goes to one of these countries or American company. Goldman Sachs did this incorrectly when they hired a Hong Kong business person who was successful to open their Beijing office. And after 2 years and $2 million of expenditure and not having any success, really, the guy in New York got on a plane, flew to Beijing, met the guy from Hong Kong in Beijing, the leader of Goldman from New York, realized that the person running the Beijing office could not even communicate with the taxi driver. His secretary had to be in the front seat interpreting for them. What you learn is the experts are not always experts. So there's a lot of room for you to figure out a better way.
Yeah.
In the area of tech startups, investors in Europe or Silicon Valley would not actually know the best startup teams yet. that are setting up in Kenya or in Nigeria or in Egypt. And so they sort of entrust the money to a European or an American who has moved there and thinks they see the problem and they want to solve it, but they don't do it as well as the local indigenous entrepreneurs who have studied abroad in Europe or America and returned back home. They've got the insights. They've got the network. They've got the connections to talent. They've got the insight into the price points that you have to get to. Instead of just saying, oh, this is how much it costs, so we're going to push this out to the market, they say, well, how much can the market pay? And how can we adapt the solution accordingly? That's how you find a successful team to invest in. But how do you get to know those? You have to know diaspora. You have to be involved. So here again, there are wonderful ecosystems that originally Chinese set up for Chinese diaspora and entrepreneurs to know and invest, co-invest, co-build startups. Same thing happened with the Indians. And I just knew that Africa would get to that point someday, and they have.
So you're focusing on tech. Are there other sectors that are starting to blossom in Africa that didn't before or were unknown before?
Let me first define tech, because I shouldn't just say tech. It's not deep tech. It's tech-enabled solutions to whatever industry. Can you think of a single industry that's doing well these days that doesn't rely on a tech innovation? I can't. Look up fit:match, and there you will find an absolutely stunning retail application that has been innovated by a Chinese woman and built out by an African diaspora man. And it is going to be front and center in Paris at the Olympics, sponsored by Sony and Samsung.
Interesting. Wow.
It's a 3D capacity imaging, and that is being used so that you can order your clothing online with confidence because the manufacturer has been able to integrate their exact specifications sent to them by the designer so that inventory can be perfectly matched so that you buy something online, you probably won't have to return it.
It fits.
It fits. Your body gets matched to SKUs.
Wow.
So it is. I cannot think of a single industry that isn't utilizing some level of tech.
Could we take you back a number of years to the much younger Marshall Wolf? And what were you thinking as you came out of education and into the working world? What were you thinking in those days, and what were your aspirations for your career?
I did not get my first degree until after I had three children. Now, that first degree was a two-year college degree, but at that point in time, I was on government assistance so that my children could eat and go to the doctor. So I had to work my way out of poverty as a single mom. But I fortunately was living in California, and they do have safety nets. It was only a two-year safety net, but that was enough to get me into investment management. I was trained. So knowing how important entrepreneurship is to empowering someone who's temporarily living in poverty, and this is an important thing for everyone to understand, there isn't the wealthy and the poor. The poor are constantly moving out of poverty, wealthy, and often falling into poverty and their descendants. So it's a cycle. It's a life cycle. The other part of that is innovation. When you've lived abroad and had to solve solutions, how to get out of poverty, etc., you are more innovative because you've seen the same problem be solved several ways. For example, irrigation of the fields. When I lived in Taiwan, I saw parents pedaling foot pedals to move the water into their rice fields. But there are different solutions in different areas. And one of the first things I did in Africa was attend a sustainable conference that there were 5,000 different innovations to the solutions of water. And so, you know, you just start, you're curious and you think, well, why are you doing that, something that way versus this other way? Experts think that they only want you to think that they know everything, and nonprofits want you to think they never fail. But what happens in that process is you don't learn. And so you don't improve. And so that handicaps the whole innovation process and the development process and the movement into prosperity.
Mm-hmm. So, Marcia, this has been a fascinating conversation. And talking of learning and sharing with our audience the key learnings that you've had, what are one or two of the key pieces of advice that you may give to people listening to this episode that you've picked up throughout your distinguished career?
Teams. On a safari, when you go out, if you see a lone wildebeest during the Great Migration, you know that that animal will be dead by morning. They will not make it through the night. When I first realized that there was huge opportunities in investing in Africa, I started working on teams to help me, because I'm only good at this set of skills, not all of those sets of skills. And I needed people that would fit in those. I knew I needed diaspora. People who had lived abroad like I had and gone home to solve the problems. I needed Africans who had better educations than I had, who had better insights than I had, who had their own networks, and we could combine our networks for success. And that's what's happened. Africa didn't have what was needed back in the 1990s when I started working there. We've been through this long, slow process of getting to the overnight successes by building out each stage of that ecosystem from the ground up with diverse teams. Our teams are Muslim, Christian, agnostic, atheist. We're old, we're young, we're Black, white. And the strength of that is that when you bring your idea to investors, when you bring your product to market, you're going to have already stress tested what can go wrong before you spend the big bucks. And your solutions and your problem solving will be stellar.
I like that.
And Marcia, on that point, is there a way in which people can contact you and connect? Because I'm sure there are plenty of people listening who have been inspired by what you've said today.
Well, thank you. I'm on LinkedIn under my name, Marcia Wolf. But I'd prefer you start by looking on loftyinc.vc for venture capital. LoftyInc.vc. And it'll pop up and you can study our teams and everything from our startup hubs and angel networks and programs and first efforts to build the ecosystem. And now we've got things like continent-wide membership associations that assist other tech hubs, over 600 tech hubs on the continent that are organized and coordinated so that large corporations can figure out ways to work with local entrepreneurs and share success.
It's very inspiring, and I don't say that lightly, really and truly, Marcia. So thank you so much for sharing all your insights. We really appreciate it, and it's fascinating. One day I'm going to visit Africa for sure.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing everything, Marcia, and we appreciate your time on the show today.
Thank you, Pauline.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley.
Seed Legals have given all listeners of the Startup Sensations podcast a special discount of £50 off any one-off products or annual subscriptions for all new clients. To get your £50 discount, simply enter the code SEEDLEGALS50 at the checkout at seedlegals.com. You'll find these details in the show notes. And don't forget to listen to episode 8 of season 3, where we interview the founder and CEO of Seed Legals, Anthony Rose. Well, Shelley, that was a great conversation with Marcia, which for us was a departure, wasn't it, in terms of geography. First time that we're talking about the continent of Africa. And it was really fascinating to hear what Marcia was saying about the diversity that exists there and the opportunities as well.
Yeah, I was very eager to talk to her. And if anything, I left with more interesting questions to pursue with her, because her experiences, as she's described them, were, like you say, very different. But in many ways, we learned some of the similar things that we've heard from other people. You know, she talked about tech as one of the main themes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she was saying that really tech is booming in certain parts of Africa. And I think we refer to Africa as one continent, but of course it's made up of 54 different countries. And, you know, these countries are clearly different and diverse. And she pulled out, I think, four countries that seem to have a lot of activity and fairly advanced entrepreneurial activity. And those were in South Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, and Kenya. And she was talking about sort of e-banking and how advanced e-banking was. And clearly there's a lot of very bright people there who are very keen and motivated and driven to actually grab entrepreneurial opportunity. That's why Marsha has obviously been incredibly busy and very successful out there, hasn't she?
Yeah. And I wanted to ask her about investors because it's easy to think of Africa as very, very risky. And she had absolutely the right answers to that. First of all, she said, you know, stability is not necessarily your friend. We've heard that from some other people too. Now, you don't want utter chaos, but these are, as she said, emerging markets. And what goes with emerging markets is huge opportunity. So this concept of innovation, emerging markets creates often early exits. So for investors, this can actually be a wonderful place to invest. But she cautioned and said, you can't just be a cowboy. You have to have a real, she used the word scientific approach to investing. You need to know what you're doing and talk to the people that know what they're doing. And then we kind of pursued some more about the cultural differences. And she brought up what I think is maybe the most important takeaway regarding Africa, which is this concept of using the diaspora.
I mean, that was a really important point and a great word to use as well, which of course means people who've left the country, had an education elsewhere, probably have some worldwide experience and then come back to the country of their origin. Those are the ideal people to partner with, to work with in a startup business because they have the best of both worlds. And really, at the end of the day, it's very difficult to parachute an American or a British guy or somebody from Europe to a culture in a country like, you know, Kenya or Egypt or South Africa. You kind of need to really work with local people that understand the country, the culture, and the local people that you would have to deal with and sell to.
She brought up a couple of other very interesting points. We were talking to her about her background, and she said, you know, poverty in and of itself is not static. People move in and out of poverty. Wealthy move into poverty, and poorer people have opportunities to move up. But she said, entrepreneurship plays an enormous role in helping people move out of poverty, which I thought was a very aspirational way of looking at it and something she's actually experienced herself. And then you asked her for one piece of advice, and she said absolutely the right thing, in my opinion, teams and diverse teams that bring the power of different thinking, different ways of doing things to whatever the specific project at hand is. So I love that. That was a great way to kind of sum up everything that she said.
Next time on Startup Sensations.
If you've built a great startup business in Europe and you then want to take it beyond the scale-up phase, your single biggest challenge is you can't actually find the people to help you build your business because they don't exist in anything like the same quantities that they exist in the US.
Thanks for listening to Startup Sensations. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform so you never miss an episode. Follow us on the Startup Sensations podcast LinkedIn page and watch video highlights on our YouTube channel. Get in touch with us. Email hello@startupsensations.com. The Startup Sensations podcast.